You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, your weekly podcast about theology and the Christian life. Tried to hold out the your. Do you like that version?
I actually didn't notice that you held out on the your. I did notice, though, that you were doing the like little karate chops before get yourself psyched up.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks for tuning in. Oh, episode 143,
I think.
Three.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in. My name is Andrew. With me, as always, is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Good morning, everyone.
And
It's actually been kind of a weekly podcast lately.
I've turned up all our microphones because I keep getting feedback of like, it's so quiet.
Oh, man.
So
turn up your volume, listener.
I can't speak, I can speak loud, but it's still low.
I know. It's the bass levels.
It's the bass levels.
It's got the manliest voice here, so... And then Corlin's over there talking like that. Oh,
I love Jesus.
But how's your guys' weeks been? Good?
Yeah, it's been good. We had a long weekend recently, but we had like one extra day because we had two weddings to go to this weekend. So took Friday off and then...
Isn't that every weekend in the Fair family?
Some summers, just about.
Every summer?
I've talked to some people this year that like... You know, I was like, oh, yeah, I went to like two weddings this summer. And they're like, two? Like, I've only ever been to two in my whole life. And I was like, are you kidding me?
I chose two out of six.
Yeah.
I had to say no to eight other ones.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's just a weird experience to like think of how many.
So were these both family weddings?
Both friends, okay. Actually. A couple that came up out of youth, actually. Both of them. Were through the youth program while Aaron and I were either sponsors or while I was in the youth pastor apprenticeship role. And then one of the other couple that got married, they have family connections with Aaron. They're not family, but they are family friends. So
which one was better?
Sheesh. It's a tough question. The one was in the rain.
Okay. So
that was really cool.
Oh, the other one was better though. Really?
Well, I mean, who knows? Define better.
That's hilarious.
I won't pick favorites in public.
You, Cam, good?
Oh, yeah. It's been a good, it's been a very full week, short weeks to do that when no one else is doing your job.
Yeah.
So it piles up, and then I was actually sitting in my colleague's office yesterday. She's the HR assistant, and she's on vacation, and silliest thing you do is approve vacation for your assistant, but...
Yeah, why would you do that?
The city manager walked by and he looked at the door and looked at me and looked at the door. He's like, oh, I see you're on a kind of an odd career trajectory. I'm like, who made vacations? It's so silly.
Yep.
But so it's been a full week, just double duty a little bit. But
yeah. And our kids are going to camp next week.
Yeah. Oh, pardon me. Yeah, that's right. They're very excited about going out to Sagatawa on Sunday.
It's going to be good.
We just wish
Ollie was old enough to go. I'm like, dang it.
That'd be cool. And there's a couple other kids from the church that are going that we know of, and there could be more. So I think
that's cool.
Yeah. Our little guy, he's pretty pumped about it. And for Natalia, she's 11. It's kind of her good stage ground for Quebec because she'll be
she's doing the French trip. Nice.
Yeah, she'll be eligible for the French trip to Quebec through school next year.
That's cool.
Did you do that?
I never went, but I obviously going through French immersion, I got to witness other kids leave and I was like, see you later. And then there was like five of us left in the class that did nothing for a week.
But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
How was your week?
Oh yeah, it was good. Yeah, we, sorry, I'm just so used to no one asking me. No one cares about me. No, we had a great long weekend. Just trying to think. Just... Hanging out with your kids. It's fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is Molly ready for school to start yet?
No, we're still okay. I'd say it's about at 3:30 to 4 every day she's ready for school again because she's like, why does these last few hours of the day go by so slowly? But I did. You used to live in the house that I live in now. That random... like cobblestone walkway around the deck that made kind of no sense.
Oh, yeah.
Took it all out.
Oh, nice.
Planted grass.
Nice.
And it started at 7 p.m. one night. Molly's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I just wanted to see if one could come out. And then it came out really easily. So then I spent the next hour and a bit digging these big pavers out and moving them and planting grass. She's like, nice. why why do you do this? Why do you start things at 7:30?
It's not much, but it's honest work.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Anyways, we are going to talk about a topic that we kind of mentioned last week, but ran out of time. But essentially, the question is kind of like this. In Christian circles, you see lots of times, you know, former really solid authors, pastors, speakers, whatever, who for whatever reason have said like, yeah, I'm no longer a Christian, or I deconstructed my faith, or
they take a swing to side of
doctrine
or theology that you weren't expecting, and it's maybe different than what you're used to their teaching being.
Yeah. So then the question, I guess maybe there's a couple questions in there, but one is like, is it still okay to read past stuff that they've written? You know, so or is it like, nope, book burning, they're bad now, we don't listen or read any of their stuff? Like, is there a right answer to that? Is there a balance? How do you handle that? Or even maybe if we can like just kind of talk a bit about like, why does that seem to be happening lots, right? If we have an answer for that, why does it seem like more and more there's these kind of like high profile Christian authors, speakers that seem to either throw away their faith or take a hard turn into some like questionable stuff?
Or you find out, like, I think it was it Ravi Zacharias, who at the end of his life,
yeah,
had some very questionable sexual
allegations, and yep. I don't know if they were proven. I don't recall the exact outcome of that scenario, but I do remember engaging with his apologetics 15 years ago and finding him a fascinating speaker, defending the Christian faith. And so I remember that one particularly because there was that, was it all for nothing? Was it all a facade? Was it all fake? And I'm like, no, it wasn't, because I remember really engaging with that, though, some of his seminars, thinking like, this guy is just a gifted defender of the faith. And so
I think that when it comes to a question like this, like, if somebody changes, should we, like you said, burn their books? I think that we like, we talk about it all the time on the podcast, liking a black and white where it's like, okay, if this happens, do this. Like, we like a step-by-step instructional for Christianity. And I think that this is a scenario that requires nuance in those scenarios, right? Mm. It can depend. Like, if you're like, there's so many different scenarios that you could throw out there. And I think God allows us and gives us the wisdom to navigate them. So an example, Sally Lloyd-Jones, she is the lady who authored the children's Bible that we were handing out here at the church.
Yeah, the Jesus Storybook Bible.
Yeah. Yep. I don't remember what year it was published. I'm not sure. Maybe a person should have looked before you bring it up, but I've been through it. It's written really well for a small child to understand the story, right? Like the storyline to hit the main markers. It's actually a really well-written version that you can read to your kids. And so it was handed out here. Parents loved it, used it for devotionals. And then a few years back, Sally Lloyd-Jones publicly started supporting LGBTQ+ within her writings, within her personality online and everything as well, right? So
she wrote some kids' books where it was like, oh, you're two dads, and, you know, so-and-so has two moms. And
yeah.
So it was like, I guess that's not very subtle, but then, you can just clearly say, oh, okay, like, that's where you're headed
there was,
now.
Yeah. And so, to my knowledge, pretty quickly, the church stopped giving that as the main, like, children's Bible, like, support kind of thing, just to make sure that there wasn't any stumbling blocks put in the way of people.
Sure.
But I think that, a scenario like that requires nuance, because there are certain truths that are presented in that transcript that she has of, or that, whatever you want to call it, that version of children's Bible that, like, Aaron and I, we still use that with our family because I know, right? Scandalous. I guess the way I would say it in a scenario like that, I truly do believe that God is bigger than Sally Lloyd-Jones. And so if there's truths in scripture that can be pointed out in a children's Bible, that will be consistent for all of eternity. That's not going to be marred because somebody did something, right?
Right.
I think for myself, it's important when I have referred back to something and I can think of a few talks from Ravi Zacharias. I can think of 20 years ago, the Numa series and the value that it had through Rob Bell's work.
Yep.
But I don't think in any public space, I guess, I suppose other than this podcast and the nine of you listening, but I don't think I would go on in any kind of public forum endorsing the fact that I still engage with work, because I think that we could, the challenge with that is that the perception is, well, he just supports that individual in their entirety. Like, so if you're posting, you know, Rob Bell quotes, and you know for a fact they were from 17 years ago, but Buddy doesn't know if they're from last week.
Yeah.
Like, you can actually potentially lead someone down a path if they're not prepared or they're not mature enough in their faith to recognize the difference and to divide what is still salvageable and what is has truth versus what is happening today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's good to... couple things to ask if the author, speaker, pastor, whatever in question is actually okay. Have they actually gone down a path that I can't like support? So like the Sally Lloyd Jones one is a good example. Like as a church, we're like, no, we don't support LGBT stuff. We don't think it's normal or good to say like, yeah, two dads, that's great, you can, that's yeah. fine. We're like, no, that's actually not, that goes against. So for that one, it'd be like, you know, should I keep buying Sally Lloyd Jones books? Well, maybe not, right? Because yeah. we don't want to. But then there's other times when it's like, and I've had conversations with people about authors that maybe there's just personal opinion around, oh, that person's a heretic now. Okay, well, what do you mean by that? Like, so I'll give you an example. Someone came and was like, something about Tim Keller. I love Tim Keller. I have, I think, almost all of his books. And great author.
You have a poster on your wall.
I do have a poster on my wall signed. But he signed my chest at a conference once. No, just kidding. But someone came and was like, Tim Keller's a heretic. He's a Marxist. He blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of like, okay, and we tried to unpack a little bit, and a lot to do was with his COVID response. Ah, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
He was a church that kind of tried to follow the guidelines a bit, and that means that you're a Marxist and you obey the government. And it was kind of like, okay, can you show me anything in his writings or sermons that would back that up?
Yeah.
Like things where he said, like, communism is good, or things like that, you know what I mean? And there's not. So then there's something there where you go, ah, okay, so he's not really a heretic. He maybe writes things that this individual disagrees with, which is fine. There's stuff that he's written that I also disagree with. So you have to be so careful, because for that individual, a heretic, you still quote Tim Keller, and that was when it came up. You quoted Tim Keller in your sermon, and everyone knows he's a heretic, and it's like,
but I didn't know.
I don't think he is. But then, you know, there's a guy like Francis Chan whose book on marriage was amazing. It was a great book. But lately, he's kind of said some stuff or written some stuff, or I've heard some sermons where I go, oh, no, not you too. Like, you know, stuff like, what's the word? Ecumenical, meaning like, there's no difference between us and Roman Catholics, and we're all just one, and let's not worry about differences and stuff like that. When I'm like, oh man, sorry, let me just finish this thought. And then it's like, so would I recommend Francis Chan stuff to people? I would still recommend his book on marriage from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But then I would be very careful to be like, just be wary about.
Yeah.
So even yesterday I had breakfast with a guy, and he was asking questions about the resurrection and what is that. So I gave him a book. I said, this book by N.T. Wright on the resurrection, Surprised by Hope. Fantastic book. This is probably the best book on the resurrection I've ever read. However, some stuff that N.T. Wright has written recently about, like, oh, this new perspective on Paul, and maybe Paul wasn't really bashing the law. Maybe the law's, you know, and stuff like that. Then I'm like, so I had to be like, don't read other things by N.T. Wright, but read this book. So I don't know. Is that, do you think that's okay to be like, read some, but not the other? Or is it like, well, we're supporting them, and I don't know.
I think, again, there's nuance there. Like, if as a Christian, you're seeking material to edify you, to aid you in your walk, you'll have people that say sola scriptura, like you should never read anything but the Bible for that, right? And yeah. I disagree. I think why else, like, we go to church to listen to somebody preach a sermon about scripture to help us understand and help us grow, and the Holy Spirit uses that to convict us often, to mold us into the image of Christ. I believe he can do that through a book that you're reading as well.
Sure.
But I think that I'm of the opinion that it's okay to read differing views, but it depends on where you're at in your walk with God and in your maturity as a Christian. Like, if you're a brand new follower of Jesus, I wouldn't throw everything at somebody that I'm reading, because
yeah, that's true.
There's you want that foundation to be there so that you're not swayed to and fro, right? But at the same time, it's been an interesting journey. In the last couple of years, I've read a few things that I wouldn't necessarily fully agree with. Mm-hmm. And it's actually been really good, really challenging to, like, okay, then if this is what somebody else would believe, where is the truth on these matters? Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not a, like, questioning, like a doubt, like, where is truth in this? Right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, okay, if I say that I believe this and this person says this, then is it just black and white, or is there nuance to it, kind of thing? So I think it can be good, but if it's just completely blasphemous, then I don't know.
Sure.
I know lots of Christians, like, there's Preston Perry is an apologist. That's the word that I'm looking for. And I believe that he's read the Book of Mormon, and he's read, I cannot think of the Quran. Yeah. He's read both of those, or good portions of them anyways. And so you could argue and say, well, that's entirely blasphemous. Why, as a Christian, would you read that so that you can tell someone about Jesus? And and yet for his work, it's been incredibly beneficial, because when he's interacting with either Muslims or Latter-day Saints, he's able to quote and know what they're quoting.
Yep.
And so, right, there's nuance there. Then
I really like deciding for myself, too.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking about this Sally, whatever her name is, because that Bible we had for the kids, and I think if you're an Indigo and you go to the Christian section, you see this book and you flip through, and you're probably not Googling the author. And so I think some people get caught too. They're like, oh my goodness, I accidentally bought that, and now I found out this. It's like, well,
yep.
I don't know. That's a little weird. I think you should dive into the author that you're getting, because we do that at the library. My little guy brought a book home, and on the back, on the front, it looked fine. And then I Google, it's like demons. It's like, no, buddy, you can't read that.
Yeah,
it's all bummed.
I've done that too, yeah.
Yeah, so then I sit at the library. My wife is texting me like, hey, can you Google this also? Like, let's double check, right?
Yeah.
So I think Christians should do that in the bookstore. But if you don't and you get caught and you have a real great book and then you found out, oh, something else they wrote, it's not like now your brain is damaged and you're at an existential crisis because you were in that space. Yeah. But I think I shared with you before, I had a professor in seminary who, again, would challenge us with different articles. And he'd be like, there are things in here that I don't think a Christian should believe. And I'd be really interested to see if you're able to spot it or whatever.
Cool.
Let's talk about them. Yep. Right. And that was really interesting things, because not everyone agreed, and they were a little more subtle. They weren't like big salvation issues.
Yeah.
So I think that's healthy also, like you said, for a person who might be maturing in their faith. But I think I told you guys, I have an NRSV Bible. It's the Catholic Bible. It's the full, all the books combined.
With the deuterocanonical and everything.
And it's quite interesting because, No, and the only reason I bought it for some study is because they have the largest translation board in the world. Their writers have the widest and largest and the most diverse translation board. So I use it as a bit of a parallel to, when I'm in school and I'm doing that. So it's quite interesting. It's not something I leave in the living room for the kids to, like, you know, why? What are the Maccabees? Like, you don't have to learn that. It's not in your Bibles.
Yes.
But I also have,
this is Daddy's special Bible with secret knowledge. You don't need to learn this.
Me and Auntie Mary read it in my office at night.
Auntie Mary. I think,
but it's interesting. But that could,
yeah.
Oh, what do you mean? It's like, well, actually, in my office at home, I have probably every translation of Bible, and
sure.
And I do have Logos, but it's just I like grabbing it and holding it.
Did you see that subtle flex? In my office at home, I have every translation of the
Bible. It's not a, yeah.
No, I'm just joking.
I appreciate that
I'm just financially irresponsible.
I appreciate
A lot of books.
I appreciate, Cameron, that you brought up even an individual like Ravi Zacharias, because I think oftentimes the question gets posed just with the idea of like a Christian who then is like, I deconstructed. So I can't remember the name, but the guy who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Yeah, Joshua
Not
Harris.
A good book in and of itself anyways.
Sure, but in the 90s, man.
In the 90s, it was
that.
Huge. Yeah. Like, it was a huge part of Christian culture in North America. And now he's deconstructed. And so there's... Like, there are Christians who have formed their dating and relationship life on that book, which, I'm sorry.
I saw the title, and I'm like, I'm not reading that.
Yeah.
Not there, interested, sorry, bro.
I'm glad you brought this up, but I have to share this, because someone sent me a John Christ. He's, like, a Christian comedian. He talked about this. Like,
yeah.
Do you know that, like, Christian authors can just be like, yeah, I changed my mind. He's like, can you imagine if you're driving and listening to Dave Ramsey, and he's like, everybody go get a credit card. He's like, you'd be like, what? Yeah. Anyways.
But so there's examples like that where I think there can be evidences before that they're maybe not as solid as we thought. Because, I mean, yeah, whether their doctrine or theology is off, it can show. The other thing is whether or not you continue to consume what they did that was good. I don't have an issue if somebody produced really, really solid material and then deconstructed and said that they're not following Jesus anymore, but there was nothing in their writing that was against scripture, that wasn't heretical, I would continue to read it to study, trusting that God would obviously convict if there was something that was inaccurate.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go and read their book on why God's fake.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't continue to seek out their material. And so it even then depends on like where your lines are as a Christian, what you feel convicted to do on anything. Because like, you look at some of the founding church fathers and we hold them up with great high esteem because of what they did for the church. But like, Augustine was a pretty messed up guy.
Sure.
Like, quite messed up all through his Christian life.
But we idolize all these guys, and that's why it's so shocking when we find out, oh, they
yeah, well, even Martin Luther has written like amazing things, yep. But then near the end of his life, he wrote some pretty terrible things about the Jews.
Yep.
So again, you could hold the same standard.
You could
like,
say, well, we don't listen to anything then.
Like his early writings and his commentaries that are great, we shouldn't read them anymore because he was kind of racist at the end of his life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well... So, you got to be careful. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is like so even a situation like Ravi Zacharias, because that's probably more prevalent and known
sure.
in today's age than if we were to talk about any of the founding church fathers. But like
yep.
a situation like Ravi Zacharias, it was, I remember when the allegations came out and there was this deep sorrow that's like, if this is true, this is horrendous. This is horrible. Yeah. But then I also looked at my own life as someone who was struggling with sexual addiction and I was like, but I am no better. And I say I follow Jesus.
Sure.
And would encourage people to follow Jesus and have encouraged people to follow Jesus. So should nobody listen to anything I've said? Should like
yeah.
X, Y, Z,
I think
right?
the difference would be that it was just like the hypocrisy and the lying
throughout
his entire life.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the big difference where at the end of his life, all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness. He was like a completely different person. I think it would be different if it was like, oh, we all know that he's struggling with stuff. Oh, okay. Not like, I'm a perfect Christian and I don't have any skeletons in my closet. I think that's maybe what shook people. Like,
I guess I never took the read off of Ravi that he would promote being a perfect Christian.
I think, though, there's also a difference, and I know there's no difference with God, no hierarchy of sin, but there's certainly a hierarchy of sin on earth, and I think... And I don't know, please disagree, like sitting at home in sexual sin and then sexually assaulting a minor or another human being, it just hits on a different level,
sure,
I think,
yep.
Especially for public perception, you know, if we found out that he had struggled with pornography, I don't think it would have hit the same as actually now a woman's
agreed.
A sexual allegation.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That you forcefully, you know, assaulted her. Like that's,
Or maybe it would have been different if like. Even if he had like when it happened, confessed, repent, stepped down,
yes.
like that kind of stuff, yep. rather than I'm just going to keep doing my ministry for 30 years with all these hidden things that no yep. one knows about like that.
Who's yeah. the author? Jean, he was a person who wrote a lot of Christian material. I don't know why. I have a couple of his books. But he struggled with homosexual tendencies and actually moved to it's John Vineau. Okay. But he, in his writings, I'll maybe bring it for Jean Vanier, I think. Okay. He wrote a number of works. He died in 2019. He's a Canadian, but in some of his works, he wrote Tears of Silence, Followers of Jesus, Community and Growth. Hmm. But one of his most, he writes about struggling with homosexuality and becoming human. He wrote so many good, Finding Peace, but he moved to a secluded, he worked with developmental disabilities, and actually wrote throughout his writings, like, I'm struggling with this inner turmoil, so I'm like choosing to be abstinent and staying away and like choosing not to. It was a really interesting throughout his works watching this narrative. And so I look at that and with actually quite a great respect, saying like, I'm really struggling. I think I'm living in sin, but I'm choosing to abstain, and I'm putting all these safeguards in place, and I'm writing about my desperation and my relationship with Jesus. You know, praying for healing and maybe never even getting it, dying as an old man alone, but choosing to commit his life to service. And I look at that parallel, and then someone who's living that two-faced lie, and it's like, I don't know, the differences are just so vast, and I have such respect for a guy like that who says, I'm a broken, sinful person, but I'm doing all of these things to ensure that I don't sin against the Lord Almighty, and I'm still going to devote my life to service. And someone else who goes commercial and makes millions of dollars and lives that dual life, that's really troubling.
So I think bottom line for me, like, I have lots of books on my shelf that are some of my favorite books that now the authors maybe are living questionable, and I still read them. I mean, like, Mark Driscoll is an example. His book on doctrine is just so good. And some of the stuff that he has said and done, and some of the, you know, abusive behavior and some of the stuff, I'm just like, I wouldn't recommend him today. You should listen to his sermons. They're great. I'd be like, no, I think he's arrogant and things like that. But if someone was like, what's a really good book on doctrine? I would still say Mark Driscoll's book from 20 years ago is solid.
This isn't meant to be a pointed question at all, but I'm curious, like, would you do the same with someone like Ravi? Or because of the type of allegation, would you choose?
No, I would still say, I have some Ravi Zacharias books on my shelf. If it was like, I'm looking for a book on how do I reach my Mormon friend I would absolutely do the same thing. But I would just make sure they're aware. And I've done this lots where it's like, here's a great book. Just so you know, this has happened. Yeah. So.
And these are probably not brand new Christians. Like, you're not talking.
No, not necessarily. No. And it's like you said before, like, I have a whole section on my shelf, you know, the heresy section, because I think it's actually like super helpful to read books that, like you said, have you actually read the opposing view of this? But someone who's like, hey, I'm a new Christian, was just baptized, what would you recommend? I wouldn't say, oh, you should read Brian McLaren, a guy that deconstructed his faith and doesn't believe in the Bible. Or, yeah, read that to start, right?
Yeah.
But I've read four or five Brian McLaren books because I want to know, right? What is his view that I disagree with? So, and I don't even know if I would call him a follower of Jesus. I think he's so progressive, so... And yet I have five or six of his books on my shelf, right?
Go ahead.
I told Erin that we were going to talk about this topic.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, does this include like media that is specifically non-Christian? Like media that doesn't project to be Christian? Do you like, for example, the example that she brought up is the show Bluey. It's a show about a little dog named Bluey and her family. And honestly, it's kind of, I've seen memes where like Snoop Dogg's like, he doesn't miss, like this man does not miss with the writing and stuff. I actually really don't mind watching Bluey. Like often if Gemma wants to watch an episode, I'll watch with her. Cause they're quite cute and pretty good and wholesome.
Totally.
But just recently they introduced the first like on-screen LGBTQ plus couple in sure. in the show. And so, like, does it extend to that where you're like, shoot, this show that was super good, now they're projecting this, and I guess we have to stop watching it. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts?
You know, I was thinking about the, because I have no context on that Joyce, or what's her name, that author? That
you'd Sally
oh,
Lloyd.
Oh, Sally.
Sally Floyd.
Lloyd.
Sally.
Or whatever. Sally Lloyd Jones.
So I would be curious to flip through and look at the context of, was she introducing a alternate lifestyle couple to encourage that child to still follow Jesus, but also reach out to the friends that are lost? I don't know the context,
sure,
right?
Yeah. Right.
Because if that was the context, I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Sure.
I can probably get behind that, because my own children see people in our like our extended family who are in a lesbian relationship, and they have questions about that. And we teach them respect, and they're still going to love those people as human beings. And that's not the lifestyle we choose for ourselves.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a weird balance between, I think your kid's too young. Like, I think that, like, my own personal opinion would be your kid's probably like far too young and impressionable to understand the difference. Natalia, for example, she has kids in her class. They're like, I'm a lesbian. And Natalia rolls her eyes and she comes home and tells us, can you believe that? Like, yeah, unfortunately I can. The world's pretty messed up, right? And we have a very frank conversation about that. And so I think that's a little different, where if there was a movie and there was that gay or lesbian couple, Natalia would probably still roll her eyes and be like, oh, I can't believe. Because there's just a different level of maturity there. But I think when they were two and three, we wouldn't necessarily expose them to that. But now I don't want to put this bubble over them where they have no idea. And that's what happened to me. And then they're 16 and they get a license and they drive away and they look around the world and they're like, wow, this place is, how come no one told me about this world? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's a weird balance.
Yeah, it really is. I think anyways, cause even a couple of years ago, Aaron and I were in the West Ed Mall, and it was an interesting experience for even just us as adults. Cause we were trying to get through. Aaron was incredibly pregnant at the time, so she wasn't moving very fast. And it was busy. The mall was insane. And so there actually came a point where, like, we were trying to get across a certain section of one of the, like, main halls, and we couldn't. We just stood there, and people just walked, like, steady. Nobody was stopping. Nobody was slowing. We were, like, trying to, like, step out. And it was just a steady flow. And a couple from the LGBTQ plus community, they saw us. And they stopped right in front of us, wide enough to block the traffic for us. Out of everyone, they stopped. So had we had our kids there, guaranteed our kids would have seen them and noticed that they were different than the people that like attend the MB church. Guaranteed there would have been a conversation. So then it's like, well, do you not go to the mall then, because there's going to be people? Like you said, that's, what do you do in those scenarios?
Maybe the difference is like putting it in front of them and then them being just naturally exposed to it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Be.
Yeah, I think one of our struggles is that when that kind of stuff is in, you know, kids shows, it's there for a reason, right?
Yeah.
It's not just, so I always struggle, and it's there that does not advance the plot line. It's not necessary. You just go.
It's to desensitize.
Yeah, it is.
A culture shift.
Yeah, it's just normalizing.
Yeah.
It, from a Christian perspective, it's just normalizing rebellion against God. So there's been a few shows that we don't watch a lot of newer cartoons. My kids are into like Looney Tunes. So Bugs Bunny, you can shoot that guy in the face. That's fine. Like, right? Because a piano falls on them and it's fine. Okay. Yeah.
Subtle racism is fine.
It's fine, guys. Yeah. Anyways,
that's
no
sarcasm, folks.
Yeah, that is sarcasm. So I mean, there's been a few times, you know, Ollie really liked the Muppet Babies show, and then there was an episode where it was like he wanted to dress up like a girl and be the princess, and we didn't get to that episode. I just heard about it online. Oh, now they're trying to, and I'm like, now, previous episodes, which were really cute, and we're learning about numbers and shapes and things like that, I'm like, would I still show my son that? Probably.
Yeah.
But I think it's just being super careful, because there's very few times when we're like, here, watch this show that we haven't previewed. I don't care. Just watch it. We never do that. It's always like either I will look up online the specific episode, what's in this.
Yeah.
Do you use kidsinmind.com?
No, we've used Plugged In.
Oh, yeah. Kids in Mind is a really cool. It's books and movies.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, that, yeah, if you're listening and you need some resources. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a few websites you can look. Okay, what's all the content in this?
Yeah.
And then honestly, yeah, we just watch stuff that Molly and I have either previewed or we do that with everything. Any kind of movie, the kids are like, can we go see this? And we're like, well, we will watch it first to make sure because...
We got kind of lucky. Like, Ollie's still pretty young.
Yeah.
We got lucky because the kids now, like, their big movie on the weekend was Star Wars Episode 4, like the first one. So it's like, okay, well, now we have some 1984 fantasy violence. but we kind of dodged that cartoon bullet of now this really progressive world.
Introducing. It's insane. Like, there was, like, a Transformers episode where it was, like, the robot wants to be called they, them. And I'm like, really? Come on. Like... So I look at stuff like that and we just don't watch
plastic / metal.
Yeah. So we just don't want, like, my kids are into like old stuff.
Yeah.
They're not like
Princess Bride. Have you showed them that yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, you have to. It's
anyways.
Great.
But anyway, so yeah, all that to say, I think this could be just using discretion. And maybe this whole topic is just a matter of conscience, right? Where different Christians will feel like, I know when, you know, Disney started doing their clear agenda of we're just going to insert all of these things into every movie from now on out.
Yeah.
Lots of Christians were like, that's it. Canceling Disney Plus. Sure. Never doing that again. I'm like, okay. We didn't like,
yeah.
And even like Molly went to preview the new Inside Out movie. Cause the previews looked great. And she went and she's like, it's actually a pretty good movie.
Actually, I heard that from like some child psychologists. Yeah. Like, you should take your children.
Because I know that Christians were like, oh, look, they're going to introduce that more lesbian and gay stuff. And she went, and she's like, actually, I would show my kids this movie. It's actually very good.
Yeah.
So
actually, I think Molly just does that because she enjoys Disney
probably.
Movies by herself.
I better go preview this movie.
I'm just trying to be a responsible parent.
So I think, however, the Christian who was like, I'm just going to cancel Disney Plus and not, I think that's okay.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's a matter.
You're missing out on Star Wars, but
it's a matter of it's a matter of conscience to a certain degree.
Sure.
So for some people who are like, yeah, Ravi Zacharias, I just can no longer read anything that he's done in the past. For me, I go, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's wrong, but the person who's like, man, his book from 2000 changed my life. Can I still like that book? I think so.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a cut and dry. Like, we're not book burners. Like, I had breakfast with a guy yesterday, and that was his parents kind of went off the deep end, and they literally, like, we're going to take all our books, all our movies, all our CDs, we're going to burn everything because it's all evil. And it's just kind of like, I don't think that's what we're supposed to do. Like, let's just burn it. I think it's a matter of conscience. And maybe for you following Jesus, you're like, I just can't read that stuff anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Can I offer a thought on deconstructing faith, though?
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's always bad because the I'm in a stream of folks who are realizing that it's much like we've talked about the way we grew up, whether it's in a charismatic faith stream or something, and you become an adult and you're like, your eyes are open to the reality and the truth of the gospel and how it's supposed to. So you have to like almost, and that's the same word that's used, deconstruct what you've been. What's been built in your life. And so then it's not like I'm deconstructing to become a non-follower of Jesus. I'm deconstructing my thoughts on healing and materialism and financial wealth and reconstructing a proper view of that by deconstructing something that was terrible, which is more so now in 2024 how that word is used. So I'm deconstructing a false idea of what faith is to tear away at all of this nonsense to get down to the core of what it means to be a follower of Jesus.
Yeah.
I think the word that I've been using, because for myself growing up in the church, there's probably others that relate to it, so I'm probably not alone in this, but I noticed how much growing up in the church, it was like the church does no wrong. Like like, not that I actually thought that nobody in the church sinned or whatnot, but like, it was just the church is all good. Everything they do is all good. And then as you grow up, you realize you're like, oh, like, it's a weird tension to think that the church is the bride of Christ and how much freedom he gives us to make decisions that aren't always great. Like it's, and yet we're still being made perfect and as the bride of Christ.
Yep.
And so the word that I've been using for myself is a disillusionment, in the sense that, like, it's almost like growing up, I had this illusion that the church was a certain way and that curtain is being torn back. And so it's not for me, I wouldn't describe it as like a deconstructing experience, because it's not like I have to take down everything that I used to know. It's like the curtain's been pulled back and it's like, oh, this is what it's like. And so then trying to relearn. So there is maybe reconstruction, I guess, that part I'd relate to. But yeah, it's quite an interesting journey as a Christian when you realize something that you've believed for a long time is not the way that it is.
And the church often constructs those thoughts. You know, I had a conversation with someone over lunch about tithing, and they were just really bent on it's 10%.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, let's talk about that. You actually have to, in a way, deconstruct your idea about that. Yep. So we talked about social systems in the Old Testament and the fact that there was no social system right now. And so essentially those with more were ordered and commanded to give those with less. And I'm like, arguably you can say that your income tax right now in Canada is your tithe, because they take 17% and they feed the poor. No, and so we had to navigate all of that, and not to say you should not give to the church, but this model actually didn't exist in the Bible.
Yes.
So it's he had to deconstruct his idea of what tithing meant in 2024 with the Christian church, because the Christian church constructed it poorly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep.
And so give, but don't feel like you're sinning against the Almighty God when 1 month you can't give 10% and you can give 5 or 6, totally. You know?
Yeah. Maybe we should call it like a reformation. Reformation.
Oh.
Because that's what the Reformation was in the 1500s. It was, ooh, the church has gone so far. We need to actually go back to what the Bible actually says.
Yeah.
And I'm the same. I mean, I grew up where it was like, alcohol is evil. If you get a tattoo, you're a sinner. You must tithe 10%. All of these things that, then you look at the Bible and you go, actually, that's not very clear there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Show me in the New Testament where we're commanded to tithe 10%. Oh, yeah, it's like nowhere. Oh, interesting. Oh, what? Jesus drank wine and it was his first miracle?
It was different wine.
Yeah. It's probably 2%. I did the same thing where it was just kind of like, or even my view of the end times. Yes, be good or else you'll be left behind and the rapture will happen and you'll be left. And then I look, I'm like, oh, the rapture's, I don't even actually find solid evidence for the rapture in the Bible. Interesting. So I don't know. Yeah. Too bad that the word deconstruction has this really negative connotation, because most of the time people deconstruct and then it's just, I just threw away everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's sad, because I think there is something good where you're like, okay, the beliefs that I were taught, are they actually from the Bible? Like, is it actual or is it just tradition? Yeah. And, you know, the idea that you wear your Sunday best, you better dress up for church.
I actually like coming to church wearing not anything special, because
but that was my thing. And then it's like, oh, actually, the Bible says that God cares far more about your heart than your outward appearance. Interesting. Like, and actually, the Bible says for women not to go crazy dressing up, because God cares far more about your character. Interesting. So I remember, though, but that was my upbringing. Like,
So I think it's still fine. Like, when I go to Browns with my wife, I'm not going to wear sweats and a tank top. Personally.
I know. I'm just kidding. I would love to see you in sweats and a tank top at Browns.
You know what? do you know what happened to me when I was in Teen Challenge for a year and a half in drug treatment? It was collared shirt every day.
Yes,
you
right.
didn't own t-shirts. Like, the way I'm dressed right now for work was every single day, and then ties, unless you're... They swung the pendulum so far that they hoped that when you... swung back, you were a decent human being.
Yeah.
Which was really great for drug addicts back then.
Sure.
So that's just the standard. And so I have challenged myself too, because I grew up in that thing, Sunday best, but then I'm realized, okay, no, it has nothing to do with the Bible.
Sure.
Jesus couldn't care less. But if you don't mind, if you generally look respectable when you go to the store, just look the way you look when you go somewhere. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Don't make it about the Bible. And that's the same way with most of our Christian practices. The the fact that we tithe and our pastor gets paid as a vocational minister. It's great. That's the system and the tradition to which we ascribe. Don't make it spiritual. Like, don't sure. make it like, oh, see, you know, otherwise you can go make tents and pay your own wage. But we're fine with the way the church has evolved to ensure that our pastor is financially secure. It's fine. Just don't make it everything about how spiritual it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's good. Good discussion. So there we go. I don't know if we actually gave a soul because I don't think
do it
like, yeah, just do it.
Be careful.
Just, yeah, exactly. And I think it, there's lots following Jesus that comes down to the matter of your own conscience and what I think we've, this is my closing note because you got to go to work. I think we've lost that in our Christian culture. We've made everything black and white and then we just attack people that disagree on certain things like this, where it's like there's lots in the New Testament that's like it's up to your own conscience, right? As long as you're not sinning outright, then yeah, some people will feel comfortable with this and some people won't, and that's okay. Like,
yeah, I think it is summed up with like what Jesus says in Matthew 10:16, where you're as shrewd as serpents or wise as serpents but as innocent as doves, right?
There you go.
So as you navigate life, when you come across stuff, there's going to be things where you are going to have to navigate with the wisdom that God has given you, seeking God's wisdom for those situations, and yet to do so as innocently as a dove, where you're not sinning against others by doing it, where you're not, causing a stir. You just are choosing yourself to follow Jesus as best as you can.
Wow. Well said. Anyways, thanks for listening. Episode 143, I believe. And as always, if you have other questions you want to talk, want us to talk about, send them in and we'll see you next time.